42. Temple of Glass.
If we try it, said Carl Mercer, do you think the Biots will stop us?
They may. That's one of the things I want to find out. Why are you looking at me like that?
Mercer gave his slow, secret grin, which was liable to be set off at any moment by a private joke he might or might not share with his shipmates.
I was wondering, Skipper, if you think you own Rama. Until now, you've vetoed any attempts to cut into buildings. Why the switch? Have the Hermians given you ideas?
Norton laughed, then suddenly checked himself. It was a shrewd question, and he was not sure if the obvious answers were the right ones. Perhaps I have been ultra-cautious. I've tried to avoid trouble. But this is our last chance. If we're forced to retreat, we won't have lost much.
Assuming that we retreat in good order.
Of course. But the Biots have never shown hostility, and except for the spiders, I don't believe there's anything here that can catch us if we do have to run for it.
You may run, Skipper, but I intend to leave with dignity. And, incidentally, I've decided why the Biots are so polite to us.
It's a little light for a new theory.
Here it is anyway. They think we're Ramans. They can't tell the difference between one oxy-eater and another.
I don't believe they're that stupid.
It's not a matter of stupidity. They've been programmed for their particular jobs, and we simply don't come into their frame of reference.
Perhaps you're right. We may find out as soon as we start work on London.
Joe Calvert had always enjoyed those old bank robbery movies, but he had never expected to be involved in one. Yet this was, essentially, what he was doing now. The deserted streets of London seemed full of menace, though he knew that was only his guilty conscience. He did not really believe that the sealed and windowless structures ranged all around them were full of watchful inhabitants, waiting to emerge in angry hordes as soon as the invaders laid a hand on their property. In fact, he was quite certain that this whole complex, like all the other towns, was merely some kind of storage area. But a second fear, also based on innumerable ancient crime dramas, could be better grounded. Though there might be no clanging alarm bells and screaming sirens, it was reasonable to assume that Rama would have some kind of warning system. How otherwise did the Biots know when and where their services were needed?
"Those without goggles, turn your backs," ordered Willard Myron.
There was a smell of nitric oxides as the air itself started to burn in the beam of the laser torch, and a steady sizzling as the fiery knife sliced toward secrets that had been hidden since the birth of man. Nothing material could resist this concentration of power, and the cut proceeded smoothly at a rate of several meters a minute. In a remarkably short time, a section large enough to admit a man had been sliced out. Since the cutaway section showed no sign of moving, Myron tapped it gently, then harder, then banged on it with all his strength. It fell inward with a hollow, reverberating crash. Once again, as he had done during that first entrance into Rama, Norton remembered the archaeologist who had opened the old Egyptian tomb. He did not expect to see the glitter of gold. In fact, he had no preconceived ideas at all as he crawled through the opening, his flashlight held in front of him. A Greek temple made of glass. That was his first impression. The building was filled with row upon row of vertical, crystalline columns, about a meter wide and stretching from floor to ceiling. There were hundreds of them, marching away into the darkness beyond the reach of his light. He walked toward the nearest column
and directed his beam into its interior. Refracted as through a cylindrical lens, the light fanned out on the far side to be focused and refocused, getting fainter with each repetition in the array of pillars beyond. He felt that he was in the middle of some complicated demonstration in optics.
"Very pretty," said the practical Mercer. "But what does it mean? Who needs a forest of glass pillars?"
Norton rapped gently on the column. It sounded solid, though more metallic than crystalline. He was completely baffled, and so he followed a piece of useful advice he had heard long ago. When in doubt, say nothing and move on. As he reached the next column, which looked exactly like the first, he heard an exclamation of surprise from Mercer.
"I could have sworn this pillar was empty. Now there's something inside it."
Norton glanced quickly back. "Where?" he said. "I don't see anything." He followed the direction of Mercer's pointing finger. It was aimed at nothing. The column was completely transparent.
"You can't see it?"
said Mercer incredulously.
"Come around to this side." "Damn! Now I've lost it."
"What's going on here?" demanded Calvert. It was several minutes before he got even an approximation of an answer. The columns were not transparent from every angle, or under all illuminations. As one walked around them, objects would suddenly flash into view, apparently embedded in their depths, like flies in amber, and would then disappear again. There were dozens of them, all different. They looked absolutely real and solid, yet many seemed to occupy the identical volume of space.